Something for the weekend. It's Trina Mari here, and my good old pal Claudia Carroll is back in studio. Good morning,
Trina,
Claudia.
It's such a joy to be back. And can I begin by saying congratulations? Because the last time I sat in this seat, you were not a mum. You were a mum to be. And now we have that beautiful little princess in your life.
I know.
I just can't get over. I know people can't see, but oh God, she's beautiful.
Thanks, Claudia. Well, yeah, I was trying to think, when was the last time you were in? You were doing your other book, not your last book even, but you were doing your other book, and we were saying at the end of the interview, you were congratulating me, saying, in a few months' time now, the baby's going to be here. Yeah. I can't believe it's been that long.
But how your life has changed.
I know, completely.
So you come into work now for a rest.
Absolutely. Sure, it's always a bit of a doss anyway. So Claudia, your life has changed a bit as well. Quite a lot has happened.
Yes,
another new book,
and it's called The Women of Primrose Square. Do you like the title?
Very good.
Actually, people can't see, but I love this cover so much. But just to tell you a bit about it, the book is set in the same location as my last book, which was called The Secrets of Primrose Square. So totally different standalone novel, with a completely new set of characters. Like, it's not a sequel in any way at all, but set in the same location. But can I just tell you the prologue, there's a character in it, and I loved writing him. He's called Frank, and he's, you know, middle-aged man, and he's kind of mousy, very quiet, very unassuming, Mr. Cellophane. And he's turning 50. He's about to turn 50. And he has never, no one's ever made a fuss of this man in his life, ever. He's never had a birthday party. He's just always, you know, the designated driver, Mr. Reliable, who people just look through. And he decides, for once in his life, he is going to have a party, and nobody will come, and it's his 50th, and everybody, his wife, his kids, they're going, oh Frank, does it just have to be that particular week, because the kids have exams and I'm away, and could we just leave it until things calm down? And in work, the office he's worked in for years, same thing. Look, we're just all away golfing, or, you know, really good excuses. And he's very sad, and he thinks, okay, you know, halfway through my life, and it looks like nobody'd miss me if I wasn't here. Fine, plan B. So he comes home to Primrose Square the night of his 50th, having been ignored all day, not as much as a card, goes into his house, which is in darkness, turns the lights on, and there is everybody he ever met in his entire life. Surprise! And there's helium balloons, and there's a birthday cake, and there's a DJ. And everyone, his parents, his family, people from school. And his wife is saying, we're so sorry. We've been telling you
lies for
the last 2 months, and you were believing it. And then the cheering dies out one by one, and it goes very, very quiet. And they all look at him, and they realise that he is dressed head to toe as a woman. And I'm not telling you anymore.
Ah, Claudia.
No, you have to buy it.
Do you know what? I was just saying, I would have loved to have my copy of the book here with me, except my sister has nicked mine already.
Oh, well. I hope your sister enjoys it.
Oh, disgraceful. The joys of getting the stuff early as well. So the book is also, I can't believe you're not telling me anymore. This is just
cruel. That's a teaser. There you go.
Okay,
that
right.
happens in the prologue. But it's a book about change and about transition. And it's actually based on a quote from Eleanor Roosevelt, of all people. And she said, a woman is a bit like a tea bag. You don't know how strong she is until dipped in hot water. Now, I'm probably paraphrasing madly. But so poor old Frank has to move out of his house. And I've got another character called Violet Hardcastle, who's probably the crankiest old lady known to humanity. And she also lives in Primrose Square, and she takes in lodgers. And so it's these three characters in going through massive transitions in their lives, who all end up under the one roof of this cranky old lady in this filthy house. And Violet's obsession is with the British royal family. And, you know, she couldn't tell you whether it's raining outside, but she could tell you what Camilla Parker Bowles wore in 1992, you know, this kind of thing. It was just a joy to write.
Yeah.
So it's always so exciting when, you know, I think as a writer, you work in such isolation.
You do, yeah.
And then when a book is out and you're suddenly out in the world and I'm meeting you and I'm in a studio and I get to talk about it, it's so brilliant.
Yeah, yeah. Because you kind of have to, do you lock yourself away now? You're really focused. You can't just do an odd day.
I actually finished another book for next year, hopefully.
She does it every time Claudia comes in.
Yesterday. And I literally, when I tell you, I didn't notice it was a bank holiday. I just was locked up all weekend. Yeah. All my, just day or night, it didn't make a difference to me.
Do you not find you get a lot of distractions between the telly and your phone and things like that?
Yeah, there are. I mean, there's always going to be distractions, aren't there? You know, but there's nothing like a deadline to put manners on you. You know, I mean, it's like I liken it to doing the Leaving Cert. Like, this is my 16th. The Women of Primrose Square is my 16th book, published book. Thank God, I take nothing for granted. There is nothing, I mean, the gratitude I have towards my editor, my publishers, the Gil Hess team here in Ireland, who are just unbelievable. They're my friends now, and that's amazing. Yeah. But it's like doing the Leaving certificate every single year. You know that intensity?
Oh, I know all about it. Should we have it with the radio listenership every 3 months?
Oh, exactly. But a pal of my goddaughter just did her leaving. And she said, oh, she said, at least, you know, they call it, have what they call the leaving stone, which is the stone and weight you put on when you're just locked away and you're just eating anything out of the fridge just to meet your deadline. But yeah, it's a joy. I mean, it's a privilege to tell stories for a living. My God.
Can you take us back then to the very, very beginning of how you started writing the first book? Because a lot of people say they'd love to do one, but they don't actually get around to it.
Well, I'll tell you two things. If anyone's listening and they thought, I quite have an idea for a book that might go somewhere, I'd give them two pieces of advice. The first one is, the drawer is your friend. And what I mean by that is, we're all great for scribbling, getting a great idea, scribbling it down, maybe doing a couple of pages and then going, oh, this is just rubbish. The drawer. It goes in the drawer. And I have found over the years, going back to revisit ideas that you might have had that sparked something, that kind of came to a cul-de-sac. If you go back to the drawer, pull it out, reread it after years have passed, you go, oh my God, actually there was something there. And then what if I put it together with this character and this idea? And then you have a story. Mm-hmm. Because one of my own exercises when I'm starting any new work is that I sit down and I write it as a short story. An exercise purely for me. No one's ever going to see this. 1,000-word short story.
So you know where it's going.
A beginning, a middle and an end. And that's just so rough. And if I get to the end of that 1,000 words and I think, oh God, there's so much more I had to leave out. I had to leave out this and this. Then I know I'm onto something. But if I get to the end of that 1,000 words and I go, actually, it's told now, then it's a short story and it should remain as one. The second piece of advice I'd give to anybody listening who might consider writing, if I can be humble enough to give advice, it's you got to be brave. You know, it's highly unlikely, as Maeve Binchy used to say, that a publisher is going to walk past your front door, knock on your door and say, hiya, listen, Trina, we're just wondering, had anything lying around we could publish? We were just passing. You've got to be brave. There are so many options open to people now that weren't there when I was starting, which was in 2004. Like, there's writers' courses now. The Irish Writers' Centre is amazing. That's an amazing resource. It's for half nothing. It's wonderful, wonderful service. There's courses on there all the time. Self-publishing is another avenue that's opened up now. The Aislings, The Importance of Being Aisling, that started as a character on Facebook with her own Facebook page. And it just grew and grew and grew. And it got so many likes that the publishers went, actually, this could be a book. So there are ways in now that weren't traditional, that certainly weren't there when I was starting. So I would just say, but you've got to be brave.
Okay.
You know, you have to get your work out there. Agents, that's another thing now. We've seen the rise of the agent. And an agent is a bit like a literary agent is a little bit like a matchmaker. Say, for instance, you're writing a science fiction and, you know, you might send it to 20 publishers and get rejected and be very upset. But your agent will go, well, the 20 publishers you targeted actually don't publish science fiction. So that was a total waste of your time.
Mm-hmm. Know your audience.
An agent
yeah.
will say, this is the person who publishes this and this is the editor and here's where we go. So that's invaluable.
Yeah, yeah. When you're writing then, and if you do want to approach a publisher, how much do you need to write?
It varies pretty much. Sometimes 3 chapters and a synopsis will be enough. But, this, you know, Winston Churchill said, I'm sorry for the long letter. I don't have time for a short one. And it's so true because the synopsis of a book is so hard. And I get, you know, people who are looking for agents saying to me, the 3 chapters, not a problem. The synopsis killed me, just killed me. It's really difficult. Again, back to just take your idea, beginning, middle and end, and write it as you would a play. Say you were describing a play. You'd go, okay, act one, this, act two, this, act three, this, and then the conclusion is act four. get it written down as short as you can, and that's your calling card. But then it depends. You know, it's worth going on agents' websites to see what it is actually that they would expect as minimum requirement. A lot of agents now want a finished book, yeah. And that's fine.
But you're not giving away your secrets really by sharing
it. Not at all. No, I mean, you know, you want to get it out there, and it's the first step.
Okay, because some people might think, oh, I'm not giving them my idea. They'll go and write one themselves.
Well, you can copyright an idea very simply. Okay. I mean, all you've got to do is whatever you're submitting to an agent, print it off. And just a really simple, cheap way is post it to yourself in a self-addressed envelope and don't open the envelope.
So you've proved that it went.
Stamped and franked and you can see that's the date. Ah. So that's just, you know, a really kind of simple way
of doing it. Ross O'Carroll Kelly has given you the thumbs up, Claudia.
Oh, I love him. I know, isn't he so good? Thank you, Ross. We'll have to make sure that Saoirse...
I wonder will Saoirse be reading it at the horseshoe.
I was at, if Paul is listening, I was at the last play that was on in the gate.
Yeah, yeah.
It was just absolutely one of the best nights out I ever
The Coppers one.
Oh God, it was brilliant. And like there was all ages from kids to grannies howling laughing. Brilliant.
He was actually on the show a few weeks ago. He's great crack as well, isn't he?
My ambition in life is I want to play the mother, Fionnuala. That's my ambition. That's my, yes, there you go.
We'll put that one out there. So thanks, Ross O'Carroll Kelly, for the thumbs up on that. Female friendships feature strongly in your work as well, Claudia.
Yeah.
You've got great pals yourself, don't you?
Oh God, I do. I think I'm an only girl. I don't have sisters. And it's very common with only girls. You can always tell an only girl in adult life because our female friends are our sisters.
Yeah, I was just saying the importance of that. I think sometimes as we get older, you're so busy with work and kids and doing things like that. You can kind of lose touch and not have the girls' nights out, but it's kind of important.
Well, Baz Luhrmann said it in that great song, Sunscreen, you know, the advice song.
Yeah.
He says, you'll have friendships in your life. And he said, you need to work hard to keep those friendships going. Like I, one of my best friends to this day, we were since primary, secondary, we went college together, we moved in together. I'm godmother to her daughter who's about to turn 21. I can't believe it. So you know, but you've got to work at it, and especially when life will take you in different directions and you form new friends, and that's the way life is. I think it's really important as you get older. I turned 50 recently, and it's really important to be able to have people who went, oh my God, I remember you in the 80s. When you fringe, you'd a bubble perm.
They've so much ammunition on you that you don't want to ever fall out with them.
And you on them. It goes two ways.
There's a warning if you're listening now, Claudia's best friend. I want to talk to you today as well about, since the last time you were in, you lost your poor dad.
I did, back in January,
How did that affect you and how's life been?
Well, you know, I was very close to him. Like, I was incredibly close to him, but... you know, I'm so lucky because we had a great relationship. You know, my mom is very, very, you know, she was devoted to dad and they were 55 years married. Like, you don't get that. So she's brokenhearted, like just brokenhearted. But, I mean, you know, I think like dad was 81. He had a great life. He passed away. I mean, it's an awful thing to say and I only kind of appreciate it now, but he had a great death and that's a very big blessing. He was at home. I was holding his hand. My mum was in the bed beside him. You know, we were all there and it was really peaceful. And he had a drink in one hand and me holding his other hand. And he just took a deep breath and that was it. And I thought, well, how do you want to go?
Yeah.
You know?
Did you know it was the end at that point?
Oh, I knew. Yeah, I knew. I mean, we called ambulance men and they were fantastic, but I knew. Yeah, but I was glad it didn't happen in the ambulance, you know, because that would have been distressing.
Mm.
But I absolutely knew by the time the guys arrived, and they were amazing, like the emergency services. You hope you'll never need them, but when you do, they're amazing.
Mm.
I mean, they were just astonishing.
How do you then deal with your grief then when your mom is also grieving so much and you're trying to look after her?
How do you deal with grief? I'm a great believer in denial. And, but, you know, I mean, it's, you know, what's the brave, Clelia Murphy, my best friend, she was bereaved. She lost both her grandparents, who she was devoted. They were like her parents. Mm. She was devoted to them. And she said, you know, the brave thing is to get out of bed and have a day and just put one foot in front of the other. And, I have my dad's ashes at home because I wanted him near me. And it's the little things trip you up, I think, you know. Like, I remember not long after he passed away, I was in the supermarket and my job was getting the food for him. Mm. And I just automatically, without thinking, filled the basket full of his things. He had a real sweet tooth and I was buying him juices and sweets and he loved chocolatey, anything chocolate. And you know, when they're older, you just want to get the calories into them. So I was buying them all sorts of rubbish, basically. And I got to the till and just bawled. Because I looked and I just automatically filled it with his things. You know, it's the little things.
I know. Yeah, I know. It's hard.
That's life, Trina. That's life.
Yeah. You know? And your mum is missing him terribly.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not easy. Yeah.
Yeah. But she's with you now, though. Yeah, she is. You're living together.
She
so she has you now, at least,
she
for
does,
company.
I know. Well, you know, we're like a Martin McDonagh play a lot of the time. But yes.
Yeah. Yeah. It really comes full circle, doesn't it? Where you look
yeah,
after
like,
your parents
they become
then.
Your kids. Oh, God. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
So Clelia, I've nearly called you.
Oh, listen, everyone does that. Yeah. And poor Clelia got called Claudine the other day. And she said, that's a first. Because Clelia and Claudia. And Clelia's
Clelia and Claudia, the two of you are...
daughter is Clara.
Ah, come here.
And the three of us go on holidays. So it's Clelia, Claudia, Clara. And no one gets the names right. So she, but Claudine the other day was the first for her. Clelia has been called Celery.
Celery?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. I suppose everyone thinks it's a spelling mistake and it's
yeah.
actually Celia, don't
it's
they?
Italian. Yeah.
So Clelia and Claudia and Clara.
Yeah.
When they queue up in Starbucks, it's an absolute nightmare.
It is a nightmare. Yeah.
Well, Claudia, thanks so much for coming in today. I could talk to you for ages, but I know you've got a busy day ahead.
Thank you. The book it just never feels like it just feels like I'm having a chat with a friend.
Ah, good stuff. Well, you can come back based on that. The Women of Primrose Square is available now, just out. And congratulations once again
thank
on
you
your, another
much.
Book.
And congratulations on your beautiful daughter.
Oh, thanks a million. This is Something for the Weekend on Classic Hits.